Okay, morning. Today's Daphne Vodazar is Lamed Beis. We're in Lamed Alpha, Lamed Beis, beer and wine. That's our discussion for today. I know I should reverse it for you. Wine and beer. Okay, there we go. Okay, I'll put wine in front of beer. Okay, so wine and beer has been our discussion. The wine, as we know, is handled by...
Snakes don't like beer.
Well, that's true. You're right. No, the snakes... Right, the snakes have decided. Right, they prefer wine over beer. Okay, fine. When it comes to wine, so as we've been discussing since the beginning of this new section of the second perek of Avodah Zarah, it started with the Mishnah back on Chavtes Amud Beis. So when it comes to wine, wine is when handled by a guy is aser beshtia uvehana. So you're not allowed to drink the wine, and you're not allowed to even get benefit from the wine. Why should that be? So we already discussed this a number of times, but this is really the underlying theme of this whole discussion. So the principal reason, as Rashi points out, as Tosfos points out, is because of chasnas. Well, really, it's more Tosfos than Rashi. But the first Tosfos on the perek. Tosfos says the principal reason why it's because of chasnas. Because, in other words, obviously the drinking of wine is a chief form of socialization. An hayom hazeh. That is how people connect and communicate and build relationships. So if we engage in wine drinking together, so that would lead to chasnas, lead to intermarriage. A secondary concern is that back in the day, so wine was used very often as part of the pagan practice. And so it becomes now Tekorvus Avodah Zarah. It was used for Avodah Zarah. And as the Gemara established in the beginning of the discussion back on Chavtes Amud Beis, that wine, when wine is used as a libation for Avodah Zarah, it is now considered Asur Bahana, Tekorvus Avodah Zarah, Asur Bahana. The Gemara linked together a number of points to arrive at that conclusion, but that's the conclusion. And so therefore, the Chachamim extended not only if the wine was actually used for libation, but even as long as the guy just simply handled the wine, that would be enough. Where now the wine is going to be asur b'shtia and asur b'hana. Okay, so that is as it relates to wine. What about beer? Beer does not come up in the Mishnah. I made this point yesterday, but just to reiterate, beer does not come up in the Mishnah. Not a Mishnah, not a Braisa. The gzera that's made on beer, seemingly, is a gzera from the Amorayim. Now, I made this point yesterday. I didn't source, so just for a moment, if I may, Tosfos. Tosfos makes exactly this point. Tosfos says, small Tosfos on the Amud, on Lamed Alf Amud Beis. Second Tosfos, it's one line, less than one line. Tosfos writes, Mimnei ma asru sheikhar, iser sheikhar, lo metzina, lo b'mishnah, v'lo b'braisa. So Tosfos makes the observation that I made yesterday. I got it from Tosfos. So that the restriction on beer is not found neither in a Mishnah nor in a Braisa. V'shema b'mei amarayim asruhu. So Tosfos therefore speculates that this came about during the time of the Amorayim. I mentioned yesterday what else came from the Amorayim, meaning where do we see that the Amorayim make any kind of institution? So yesterday, I didn't have time to think. You know, my thinking happens beforehand. You know, anyway, so I thought about it some more. We just did it in Masechet Shavuos. I feel kind of dumb now, but it's okay. In Masechet Shavuos, we had a institution made by the Amorayim, and that's what's called Shavuos Hesus. Meaning we know that min haTorah you make shvuos under certain circumstances. But let's say I make a claim against somebody who has a full denial, and he says, I don't know you anything. So from the standpoint of the Mishnah and the Braisa, he makes no shvua whatsoever. And then what was instituted by the Amorayim, and here, if we remember correctly, it was Rav Nachman, what was instituted by the Amorayim is that even if you're making a full denial on a claim, so you have to make a shvua. It's what's called shvuos hesus. So, okay, just another example. I only got one, but still, at least I thought of one. Another example of an institution, a takana that was made by the Amorayim. Okay, good for me. Let's go to the Gemara. Let's go back to the Gemara. So let's start today with the beer. And I know we started the beer discussion yesterday, but let's start from the beginning again. So we are in Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. We are about eight lines from the top of the Amud. It's the last two words in the line. Itmar mipnei. The Gemara starts off in Itmar mipnei ma asru shecher shov dekocham. So beer of a guy. So why did they asur it? So Rami Barcham Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Mishim Chasnus. So one is because of intermarriage, just like alcohol is a language of socialization. So is alcohol, meaning wine, and now we're talking about beer. And so therefore, so mixed drinking would lead to mixed marriage. And Rav Nachman Amar Mishim Gilui Agilui. So and Rav Nachman says the concern is Gilui. In other words, what happens is that when the guy manufactures their beer, so they leave it exposed. And again, something which we've talked about a lot lately in the last couple of dapim, but quite frankly, it's hard for us to relate to because, we don't see that many snakes to begin with, and B, I, at least in my short lifetime, I've never seen a snake, you know, dip into any one of our drinks. But back in the day, so that was a significant concern they had. And so therefore, when liquids are left exposed, right, water, wine, and now we're discussing beer. So what happens is that the snake is going to come, take a swig, insert its venom, and now this serves as a sakana. It poses a sakana to us. And therefore, that's why the Chachamim mastered it. So either because of intermarriage or because of a sakana. So the Gemara says, Gilui Demai. The Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Let's talk about this Gilui a little bit more. Now, when I say we talk about it, meaning we're just going to, like I said yesterday, we just follow the Gemara's assumptions. The Gemara has a number of assumptions about the behavior of snakes and their beer. And we just simply follow all the assumptions the Gemara makes. Ile Magilui Dinez Yasya. So Ananami Maglinan. So the Gemara says, during the fermentation process, so we too leave our vats exposed. Meaning that the snakes are not interested in fermenting beer. So the Gemara says, Ve'ela dechavisa. So the Gemara says, it must be that when it's stored in the barrel. Ananami Maglinan. So the Gemara says, we leave it exposed, meaning the snakes are simply not attracted to the beer. So Lotzricha Ba'asu de Matzlamaya. So the Gemara says, you know what happens? By the guy, when they make their beer, the first thing they do is they settle their water. So in other words, so they leave the water in a vat, they leave it open and exposed, and they let that water just sit there because they want the water to settle. All the impurities of the water are just going to collect and settle on the bottom, they'll filter the water. So anyway, so that's what they do. And while they do that, because they're not worried about snakes, and if you're wondering, why aren't they worried about snakes? Meaning if it's venom, and it's a sakana, shouldn't they be worried just as much as we are? That's an excellent question, which the Gemara is going to actually answer in just a couple minutes from now. But in the meantime, however, they're not worried about that. So they leave their water while letting the water settle. They leave it exposed. So the Gemara says, and that's why the beer from them is going to be a problem because it's made with water that had venom in it. So the Gemara says, Elamayata Yashan Tishtari. So the Gemara says, the Amar Rebbe. I think it's Rebbe. Yasha Mutter Ein Manichal Yashain. It's probably Rav. I'm sorry. Now I'm thinking out loud. It's probably Rav because we're talking about the Amoraim. It says Rebbe?
It's Rebbe.
Okay. All right. Okay. Good. I'm a little bit confused now, but okay. Amar Rebbe Yasha Mutter Ein Manichal Yashain. Hichmitz Mutter Ein Manichal Lahachmitz. So the Gemara says, well, the Gemara here talks a little bit about chemistry, and the Gemara says, well, look, venom is a bit of a blocker, meaning that if, in fact, there's venom in the water, so it doesn't allow the water to settle. If there's venom in the water, so it doesn't allow it to ferment. So in other words, so the venom serves as a bit of a blocker for the both settling process and the fermentation process. So the Gemara says, so then why should we be concerned? So the Gemara says, Gzeresh Yashen Atu Chadash. So the Gemara says, you're right. Meaning, if in fact the water got settled, and if in fact the beer was fermented, so then you're absolutely right. However, what we're concerned with is that they don't wait for the water to settle, and then they're going to make the beer. And even though, generally speaking, that's not how it's done, but still, since there is a chance for them to do it in that manner, and since that does pose a venom risk, so therefore, the Chachamim goes around all circumstances. So where do we stand right now? So we have a Gzeira D'Rabbanan of not drinking beer manufactured by a guy, coupled with two explanations. One is because it leads to intermarriage, and the other one is because of the health risk of the venom that was inserted by the snake. Rav Papa Mafkinale Abava D'Chanusa V'Shasi. Now, Rav Papa would drink beer manufactured by a guy, but he would not drink it in their house. In other words, I know it's funny, but we're really talking about like microbreweries over here, where like the beer was just made in their home. But anyway, so he would drink it, but in other words, he would insist, Rav Papa would insist that, bring it out of the house and I'll drink it outside the house. Rav Achai, Maisi Lelebeis V'shase. Now Rav Achai, he would just go one step further. And that is that he would buy the beer from the non-Jew, manufactured by the non-Jew, buy it, and only drink it when he gets home. Now, obviously, both these Amoraim are not worried about the sakana consideration. Because if there was a concern of venom, it doesn't matter where you drink it. You can drink it wherever you want. And obviously, if it's a venom concern, if it's a life-threatening concern, it would be a concern anywhere. So obviously, the Gemara points out that what they're concerned about is intermarriage. And over here, as long as I'm not drinking with them, so then it would not pose a problem of intermarriage. This is interesting. In other words, as we're going to learn later on, a number of rabbinic decrees were made because of intermarriage. Pas Akum, Bishul Akum, Gvinas Akum, and there, it doesn't matter where you take the food, meaning once they produce it, once they manufacture it, so then it's going to be usur. And over here by beer, look at these leniencies that these Amoraim help themselves to. Oh, I'm not going to drink it with them. I'm going to take it out of their house. Oh, I'll only drink it when I get home. Where do you find this? So it could very well be that this, since, because, and this point over here I don't have a source for, but I think what I'm about to say is reasonable. Okay? But I don't have an actual source for it. But because this was a later enactment, this was an enactment made by the Amoraim, and this doesn't go back to the time of the Mishnah or a Braisa, so therefore it was a gzera that was made with built-in leniencies, notably what we just saw over here. Meaning that as long as you're not drinking it on their property, on the premises, as long as you're drinking it off the premises, so then it would be fine. I think that's a reasonable comment. Okay, and if anyone has a source for that, I'm all ears. The Gemara says, Miu Rav Acha Avid Harchaki Yisera. Now Rav Acha, Miu, by the way, I added because the Bach added that word. Miu Rav Achai Avid Harchaki Yisera. Now Rav Achai, he actually had a further precaution. Rashmo Bar Bisna Ikla Lamargun Isile Chamra Velo Ishti Isile Shikr Velo Ishti. So and the Gemara tells the story of another Amora. So Rashmo went to a particular location. They brought him wine, he refused to drink it. That's the Stam Yenam. They brought him beer, and he refused to drink it. So the Gemara says, wine, I understand. In other words, that's the Takana that we've been talking about now for the last 3 days. But beer, what's the problem with beer? So Shichra Mishamai, Mishum Shimsa de Shimsa. So the Gemara says, because of a concern. Meaning, it's a secondary concern, but still. In other words, just like the enactment of wine was made as a precaution, again, could be because of Yain Esach, could be because of Chasnos, but in other words, just like wine is made as a precaution, so he said that beer also has a similar precaution. It may be the next level, but he felt it was necessary. So already you see by the Amoraim, you had different practices of to what degree they're going to be holding of this gzera of Sheikhar. Am Rav Hai Sheikhar Dharma Ashari, V'chibri Lo Nishtei Minei. So Rav Hai says that a beer manufactured by a non-Jew is permitted, but my son won't drink it. So manafshach. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. E shari lekulei ami shari yasa lekulei ami aser. So the Gemara says, I really don't get it. It's good or it's not good. In other words, how could it be that in one family, in the same family, so the father's drinking and the son's not drinking? So ela rav safra mishum giluye. Sorry, I made a mistake. I said Rav Hai. That was silly. Okay, so it's Rav. So the Gemara says, Ishar l'kolei amishari I aser l'kolei amiaser. So the Gemara says, Ela Rav safra mishum giluye. So the Gemara says that Rav felt that the issue was giluye. Meaning, again, there are two reasons why the ban was made on beer. The Rav felt that it was the second reason, which was really the operating issue. And that is the health consideration, and that there's some venom in it. The azamarua de kasusa vikadile zire vidalke milkele tfe. So the Gemara says like this, that yes, in other words, there is a slight concern that a snake went in, drank a little bit of it, injected his venom. But generally speaking, during the fermenting process, what's going to end up happening is that the fermentation process is going to burn off most of the venom. However, chia bariho vilaki lo nishte mine. But my son Chia, so he's not the strongest of people, he's not the healthiest of people. So for me and for most everybody, so whatever residual venom there may exist, it's not gonna adversely affect us. But for my son, who is a little bit weaker in constitution, so that's why he doesn't drink it. Okay, so let's go further. Amishmo called Shratim Yeshlam Eris. Shell Nachash Mamis Shell Shratim no Mamis. I'll say reptile, but the Gemara doesn't really mean reptile. But every reptile has venom. And it just happens to be that the venom of a snake is poisonous and is lethal. All the other venoms from the other crawly animals, reptilians, so it's not lethal. I'm Lishmolachia Bar Rav Bar Aryeh, Tave Emalach Milsa Malyasa Have Amarav Avucha. So Shmuel says to Chia son of Rav, it's nice by the way, Rav named his son after his uncle, right? His uncle was Rabbi Chia, and when Rav had a son, so at least one of them, he named the same name. So he says, Bar Uriah, Tava Emalach Milsa, Mal Yasa Havle Amarav. So, let's hear something that your father once said. So, Rav Avucha. Hachi amravucha, hani amai, zukani, dahavushasi gilui, velo mesu. So, these non-Jews who would be drinking exposed liquids, whatever it was, beer, water, whatever. So, why is it that they're not worried about exposure to venom and we're worried about exposure to venom? In other words, presumably, we're all humans and we're all anatomically the same, biologically the same, physiologically the same. So, why do we have cautionary notes about venom that they don't have? I don't understand. So, now this is Rav Sanchia giving an explanation that he heard in the name of his father. So the Gemara says, yes, in terms of anatomy, we're all the same. But in terms of diet, we're obviously not the same. In other words, they help themselves to a healthy dosage of shkatzim v'ramasim, meaning, basically, they eat these animals. And in the context of our Gemara, by the way, it's like really good. Meaning, they eat these animals that, as the Gemara just established, produce venom. So in other words, they introduce venom into their system all the time. And so basically what they do is they create an immunity. Thank you. So they're creating now an immunity towards it. So here you have them and their diet, and we have us and our diet. We don't eat shkatzim v'ramasim. It's not part of our diet. So the Gemara says that's the difference between us and them in this regard. Amar Rav Yosef, haichala d'shichra d'arma aser. So the Gemara says that you have the vinegar of the beer of the non-Jew, so that's going to be, vinegar produced from beer, meaning vinegar is just simply, you know, these alcoholic drinks that soured. So wine vinegar, and now we're talking about beer vinegar. So haichal d'shichur d'arma aser. So the vinegar of the non-Jew is going to be aser. Why? So d'ma'arve bei d'urdaya d'yayin nesach. So the Gemara says because what they do is that as part of their general procedure, once the beer turns into vinegar, so what they do is they add some wine dregs to it, maybe to enhance the flavor, for whatever reason they do it, that's what they add to it, and therefore basically it has it has yayin nesach in it, or stam yenam in it. Am Ravashi, Otsar Shari, Kem Dem Arvi Bey, Masri Sari. Ravashi points out that if you're getting the beer vinegar from the vat itself, so in the vat itself, they don't add the wine dregs. They only add the wine dregs after it's taken out of the vats. So therefore, if you're buying the beer vinegar directly from the vat, so Rav Ashi says under those circumstances, it would be mutter, it would be fine. That takes us to the end of the beer talk of the Gemara. So again, a really interesting discussion in the Gemara regarding beer as a later enactment that was made. And the Gemara brought down two opinions in terms of why it was enacted, intermarriage or sakana, danger to our life, a venom. The Amoraim, various Amoraim, allowed themselves to certain kulas. The Amoraim clearly argued in terms of why the enactment was made altogether. And then a further discussion of whether or not, once beer is converted into vinegar, whether that would be okay to purchase from them. Let's continue now in the Gemara. We're on the top of Lamed Beis Amad Aleph, Cheres Hadriani. We're talking now about the earthenware of Cheres. This takes us back to the Mishnah on Chavtes Amad Beis. So you recall in the Mishnah, so the Mishnah listed the things that are Aser Be'eshtia and Aser Be'hana. So number one, of course, on the list is Yayin. So that's Tam Yainam. Number two on the list is Chomet Shoveh D'Chomet She'ah Mitzchilas Yayin. That vinegar that started off as wine, meaning wine that they manufactured, then the wine turned into vinegar, and even though now it's different, but still the Isser is still there. And then the third thing on the list is Cheres Hadriani. So now we're talking about Hadrian earthenware. Hadrian earthenware, what is that? So that's the Gemara's first question. Cheres Hadriani. My Hadriani, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rashmul, Cheres Shel Hadrianus Kesar. The Caesar Hadrian. Okay, that was a little bit helpful, right? A little bit. So, first of all, we do know, I'm assuming I'm right about this. I'm assuming I'm right about most things, but okay. The Hadrian was the Roman Emperor who lived after Churban Bayis Sheni, and he was the one who knocked out the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. In other words, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in 70 of the Common Era, and then about 80 years later, approximately, 50 years later. So about 50 years later, Bar Kokhba, together with Rabbi Akiva, with the support of Rabbi Akiva, led a rebellion against the Romans, failed rebellion, and the Caesar at the time who squashed this rebellion was Hadrian. So the Gemara over here is talking about the Caesar Hadrian and his army. Okay, what do we need to know for our Gemara over here? Is basically, reconstituted wine. This is going to be interesting. Ki also Rav Dimi Amar Karka Pesul Aisa Shlo Avda Avda Me Olam Avda Venata Verami Le Lechamra Begufe Chivri Umaitse Lehu Lechamrayu. So the Gemara says, here's how they made their Hadrian earthenware. So they start with virgin soil, never been worked before, and now we're talking about the first vineyard that's planted in such soil. Again, this is done by them. For us, it would be a problem of Arla. So, and they would plant their first vineyard in the soil, and then for that first harvest, so what they would do is that they would take this now wine, and this wine was extraordinarily potent. And then what they would do is they would take the wine and they would make earthenware from this very soft soil. This very soft soil that was used to make earthenware is extraordinarily porous. So you have really potent wine, very porous material of earthenware. And then what they would do is that they would saturate this earthenware with this wine. So basically what you had now is dry wine. Right? In other words, wine that was totally dehydrated and absorbed into the earthenware. Now, the Gemara goes on and continues to explain what they would do. Umetabalu bechaspe, now with this earthenware that was totally saturated with this wine, they would break it and they would put it in their backpack. And then the soldiers would go out to war. Vidar bahadayu, they would carry it with them. Vecholhecha dematu, now when they would stop in camp. Tarulahu, so then they would soak the earthenware in water. Vishasu. And they would basically reconstitute the wine. So basically, reconstituted wine, going back almost 2,000 years. I'm Rav Yeshua ben Levi, Vrishan Shalan Kishlishi Shalan. Gemara over here gives us just some sort of measure of how potent was this wine. So the Gemara says that by their third cycle of reconstitution, that means that they soaked it in water, that's cycle one. They soaked it in water again, cycle two. Soaked it in water again, so by a third cycle, that wine that they rehydrate and reconstitute, that for us would be our first press. So that is just an idea of how potent a wine we're talking about. Okay, so now what we're learning together is the following. That earthenware, so even though, it's interesting, even though it is earthenware, it's really dry wine. What it really is wine in a solid state. As wine in a solid state, it was manufactured by them, so it's tam yenim. And therefore it's aser. It's aser bishtia. Now you're not going to drink the earthenware. I understand that. But here we get to the important part. It's also aser bahana. So you're not allowed to get benefit from it. Now, Gemara asks the following question. So now that we learned together that you're not allowed to get benefit from it, ask the Gemara, Ibailahu. My lemismach mum karamita. So can I do the following? Can I put it under my bedposts? Okay? You know, sometimes these desks, so they're uneven. So what do we do? So we have these knobs on the bottom. You turn the knobs. But sometimes, in other words, if you have like a, take an item and put it underneath in order to level it. So back then, so if you had a bed with four posts, and sometimes the bed was uneven, so you take an item, and you just, a nice hard item, and you put it underneath in order to level off the bed. Can I take now these earthenware shards, put it underneath the bed in order to level the bed? So effectively, what I'm doing now is I'm getting hana'a from the earthenware. Now, before we go further in the Gemara, let me just make this point very clear. We are now discussing an issue of rotze b'kiyuma. That's the Gemara's language. Rotze b'kiyuma means like this. It means that I, both in declaration and in intent, want this to exist. For me, wanting this to exist when we're talking about avodah zarah, that's an isser. Now, what isser am I violating? The Gemara doesn't say this, but probably the best way to say it, probably, is that, it's, in other words, by me wanting it to exist, that I'm violating Isser Hana. Meaning, effectively, what I'm doing is I'm benefiting from it. Because I clearly want it to exist. So by me declaring, and not just declaring, it's not just words, but by me being really interested in this item existing, so that is an Isser of what's called Rotze B'Kiyumo, and again, the best way probably to say it is that I'm violating the Isser Hana by me wanting it to exist. Here, however, it's going to be a little bit more subtle. Because, yes, obviously, as my bed now is shaking, and I'm taking out the earthenware, I'm putting it under the bed now, and the bed now is nice and level. So clearly I'm getting benefit from it. But it's not primary benefit. Meaning that when we're talking about samyenam, primary benefit would be drinking it. So in other words, in this case, it would be reconstituting it and drinking it. But over here, however, we are talking about not using it for primary usage, but basically just simply even out the bed. So that's a secondary usage. The Gemara's language to describe this is al yidei davar acher. So I do want it to exist, but for a secondary usage, not for its primary usage. Is that acceptable or unacceptable? Mutter or usser? So the Gemara, this is the Gemara's discussion. So the Gemara says, is it going to be permitted or prohibited? Tashma, the Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Yochanan, Chad Asa v'Chad Sharei. So the Gemara brings down, it's a machlokus amarayim. Skip the next three words. Meisrei, the Gemara now challenges based on the following brisa. Har dardarim, v'haruk ba'os, sho'ov dekochavim. So you have these various flasks of a non-Jew, meaning that they used it for their wine. Yain she yisrael kanos b'hem. So let's say I emptied it out. So now I have a flask that was used by a non-Jew, which means that it didn't have wine sitting in them. I emptied it out. I poured my wine into it. So now can I drink that wine? Can I get benefit from that wine? So the Tanakhama of this brisa says that I can't drink it, but I would be allowed to get benefit from it. The Gemara then brings a report regarding Rabbi Gamliel, brought to us by the son of Rabbi Gamliel, that Rabbi Gamliel, in fact, drank from it in Akko, meaning so it was a flask of a non-Jew, emptied out their wine, our wine was poured into it, he drank it, and the Chachamim said, we don't agree. Meaning, it's mutar b'ana, but you're not allowed to drink it. Now, I already pointed this out in the Mishnah, but let's just say this again right now. If the wine is put in their flask, so why is it, according to the Tanakhama, why is it that on one hand I can't drink, but on the other hand I can get benefit from it? If it absorbed the stam yenam of the flask, so then it should be both aser b'shtia uvehana. Meaning, why are we now making a split decision? So I said back in the Mishnah, and I'll say it again now, because over here, when you have mamashus, when you have the actual wine itself, the wine itself is aser b'shtia vana. But if all I have is tam, if all I have is just simply the flavor and the taste of it, even though throughout halacha we say tam ki ikar, but if I just have the flavor of it, the flavor is aser b'shtia, but the flavor is not aser b'hana. I said that back in the Mishnah, and the same thing is true over here. Now Rabbi Gamliel obviously disagrees. He says that you're in fact even allowed to drink it. In other words, he must be of the argument that it doesn't even absorb the flavor. More of that discussion is coming up in tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, however, the reason why we're quoting the brisa now is for the next part. No, the shalv de kochavim, Rav Shim Gamliel Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yoshua ben Kefusa'ai, also lasos ma'am shtichel lachamor. Let's say we have the leather pouches of a non-Jew, meaning it was used for their yayin nesach, or stam yenam. Let's say stam yenam. The leather pouches of the non-Jew used for the stam yenam. So now, can I buy the leather flasks? I'm not going to drink the wine, obviously. Stam yenam. I'll empty it out, or in other words, he sells it to me empty. And then can I take the leather pouches, take them apart, and use it to make a saddle for my donkey? Okay, so in other words, basically, I'm going to recycle the leather. As a saddle for my donkey, the brisa says you cannot. The brisa says you cannot. So what are we talking about over here? This is again seemingly the same discussion of the Hadrian earthenware. It's rotza b'kiyomo. I want it to exist, but not for its primary usage. I don't want to drink the wine that's absorbed in the flask. All I want to do is just simply I want to use the leather to make for a saddle for my donkey. And the brisa says you cannot do that. And so the Gemara now makes the obvious observation. On the second point, the brisa is unequivocal. The brisa says very clearly that you cannot recycle the leather pouches and use them to make a saddle. This seemingly is because it's rotza b'kiyumo. I now want I want it to exist even though I'm not using it for primary usage, even though I'm only using it for a secondary usage. Ulatamech, the Gemara says, but I don't understand. Now the Gemara says, do you know that our practice is that we buy earthenware jugs from them all the time? Now, just to make this point very clear, we buy earthenware jugs from them all the time. Earthenware jugs that they use for their stam yena. We buy it from them all the time. Meaning, Maisa B'chol Yom. The Gemara is just asking because we do it all the time. Our rabbis are fine with it. And the Gemara is basically asking what's the difference. Now, the Gemara does not mean over here that we're going to buy the earthenware jugs and use it to hold our wine, to store our wine. Again, we're going to talk much more about this in tomorrow's daf, about koshering, the possibility of koshering the earthenware jugs. But right now, the Gemara is simply talking about buying the earthenware jugs and putting flowers in it. You know, putting plants in it. Or in other words, using it for some other usage. All the time it would be okay, it's accepted. It's totally an acceptable position. So the Gemara says, so wait one second. So now the earthenware jugs are saturated, they're absorbed with the stam yena. And I'm using it, it's rotz to be kiyuma, but I did davar achir. I'm not using it for its primary usage, I'm using it for secondary usage. And our rabbis say it's fine. So when now the Gemara says, so I didn't understand, so what's the problem with the saddle? What's the problem with the saddle? I'm buying their leather flasks, I'm recycling it, and I'm making a leather saddle out of it. Should be fine, right? So So the Gemara says, the leather saddle is a unique situation, and for that the Chachamim gave a very specific zera. The rabbis were worried that while traveling, and I made my saddle on my donkey out of the recycled leather flasks, here's what happened. We're in transit, I'm carrying a whole bunch of wine, and one of the wine break. And now I need to make a makeshift, jug. What do? I'm in the middle of nowhere, I got no material, oh, the saddle. And so what the Chachamim were worried about is, I'm going to take the saddle and recycle it once again, and convert it from a saddle back into a flask. And so for fear of that, for concern of that, so the Chachamim made it Gzera. I know, as I'm saying this, I know, it sounds a little bit unlikely that that will happen. And on top of that, if the concern over here is because ultimately, what are we talking about? We're talking about Stam Yena, which in of itself is a Gzera. Okay, I do hear that. I'm bringing it up myself. But nevertheless, though, the Gemara's basic point is the saddle scenario is a unique scenario. But in other words, generally speaking, if I'm buying their jugs that is absorbed Stam Yena, but I'm not using for its principal use, I'm using it for a secondary use, the Gemara says, that's fine. Now the Gemara says, but wait one second. Rotsa b'kiyumai de davar acher. Remember, when we introduced the topic, it was a machlokus, whether it's mutter, whether it's aser. So the Gemara says, so if you subscribe to the idea that it's mutter, so then buying their earthenware jugs for other usages is fine. But what if you subscribe to the idea that rotsa b'kiyumai de davar acher is aser? So how do we, under what basis is it permitted to buy the earthenware jugs, even if I want to use it for something else? If you subscribe to the idea that it's aser, so then it's aser. Ulaman damar, that's the Gemara's next question. Ulaman damar, rotsa b'kiyumai de davar acher aser, maishan kan kanum desharu. So why should it be that buying the earthenware jugs is permitted? Amalacha hasam leisi lisur be'enei, hacha isa li'isure be'enei. And the Gemara says like this. Look, when we're talking about the Hadrian earthenware, you know what it is? It's really dry wine. It's wine in a solid state. It is so saturated with wine, we don't really look at it as earthenware that has an absorption of wine. Really, the correct way to look at it is, it's wine in a solid state. I put it in the water, I reconstitute it, it's really wine. So there, the reason why we're going to be machmir by the Hadrian earthenware, and again, not everyone subscribes to this, but if you say that I can't even use it to hold my bed up, it's not because it is absorbed with wine. It's because it is wine. Masha Enkein, if I have a jug that they use, one of their jugs that was used for the storage of wine, and now we emptied it out, and it has an absorption of wine, that's all it is. It's just an absorption of wine. It's not dry wine. It's not fundamentally wine.
What if the wine was used for Avodah Zarah?
In
other words, the wine that's absorbed into that porcelain was used for Avodah Zarah.
So
you wouldn't be able to use it as a bed.
But again, anything that comes out is not mamushes. It's not substantial. It's taste. And again, but in other words, the Isser D'Oraisa, the Gzera D'Rabbanan is going on the mamush, on the actual taste that comes out. I'm saying this just in terms of the Yisr HaNa. The taste that comes out is not Asr B'Hana. the mamashiv that comes out as asar bana, but not just not the taste. Veloho dulo. Okay, now you remember that was reported from Gamliel that what happened is that it was one of their flasks that they used for their wine. They emptied it out. We stored some of our wine in it, and Rabbi Gamliel took the flask and took a swig. And the Chachamim didn't agree with him. So, v'riminu. The Gemara now just has another brisa. Essentially the same point, just a subtle difference. You'll see the difference in a moment. Yayin haba beruk ba'o shal avdi kochavim, aser, b'shtia umutar ba'ana. Again, the Tanakhama's viewpoint is that if we have our wine in their flasks, so you can't drink the wine because it has absorbed the taste, and the taste is aser. But in terms of hana, you'll have to get benefit from it. Hey Shimon ben Gudel, if ne benosh Rabbi Gamliel, ah Rabbi Gamliel, sheshasim yimena ba'ako. So Rabbi Gamliel took a drink from it. Vehodulo. So the subtle difference, of course, is a reaction. The reaction was agreement. So in the first price, we had a reaction of disagreement. In this price, we have a reaction of agreement. My lo hodulo de kamer hasam kosiato. Ava beno modile. Gemara's answer, the first answer is very simple. Some people agreed, some people disagreed. His colleagues all disagreed. His son agreed. It's nice that the son backs up the father. You don't always find that, but here's a good example. Ibai, same of the Gemara, gives another answer, guda l'chud v'guda l'chud, a really technical answer, meaning that there are two Shimon ben Gudas. There's a Shimon ben Guda with an ayin at the end of his name, and there's a Shimon ben Guda with an alf at the end of the name, and they're two different people. So in other words, there are two different reports, and in the two different reports, so we have slight variation. And the slight variation is whether or not the Chachamim agreed or didn't agree with the practice of Rabbi Gamliel that he would drink straight from the flask. Right. Okay. Oros Levuvin. Okay, we are now going to go into a little bit of forensics right now. Okay? There was a little bit of forensics. There was a pagan practice in the good old days, which is that what they would do is, as they were offering this animal to their idol, so what they do is they would cut a hole in the chest of the animal while the animal's alive, and they would reach in, they would grab the heart, they would rip the heart right out. Okay, so that now means that the entire animal is takrovis avodah zarah. Excellent reference. So the animal now is takrovis avodah zarah. And as such, as takrovis avodah zarah, so that means the entire animal is also be'achila, uva'anana be'achila, of course, it wasn't shechted, but the animal is also be'ana as well, and that of course means that the hide is now also be'ana. So now, you are in the market and you're hide shopping. You're looking for a hide. And now you see a hide that's spread out, and now you notice a cut in the hide, and oh boy. In other words, this is the hide coming from an animal that was used in this practice. How do I know? So that's why I say it's a little bit of forensics right now. In other words, what you're going to look now is going to look at the location of the cut. In other words, it has to be opposite the heart. You have to look at the shape of the cut. It's got to be circular. And also, the Gemara is going to make this point, I'm just foreshadowing everything. And also, you got to look for a little bit of blood on the hide. Typically, there's no blood on the hide. In other words, first the animal is killed, drained, and then they flay the animal. But over here, because they're ripping the heart right out of this live animal, so what you should expect to see is a little bit of blood now on the hide itself. So if you have all this evidence, so now you can basically, you know, retrace the steps and say, this hide over here was taken from an animal that went through this practice, that went through this rite, R-I-T-E. And therefore, the hide would be asabana. And that, or everything I just said, the Gemara is going to make all these points. Tana Rabbani. Ezu or Levov Kol Shekaru Keneged Lev. So first thing the Gemara makes is a question of location. The hole's got to be around, it's got to be opposite the heart. Vikadur Kemin Aruba. In terms of the shape of the cut, it's got to be circular. And Yeshalav Koridam. And it's got to have a little bit of blood on it. So now you put all this information together, even though all you see is just a hide in front of you, and now you know this hide was used for Avodah Zarah. Ain alav karadam mutter. However, if let's say you got two pieces of evidence, but there's no blood, oddly enough, the Gemara over here is mekel. Meaning even though there is good evidence that it was used for this rite, but if I don't see blood, so then even though there are other other factors that lead us to this conclusion, but the Gemara says, without blood, it's mutter. But the Gemara over here makes a point, and that is, what if the evidence was tampered with? Let's say the hide was salted, right back in the day, so as part of the preparation of a hide, so they went through a salting process. So now, if they salted the hides, so now there may have been blood on the hide, but as we know, what the salt does is the salt absorbs the blood. So now, if the hide went through the salting process, so an absence of blood no longer is good evidence, meaning now it's been tampered with. And so, even if it's missing blood, but if I have a circular hole opposite the heart, so now I have to assume that it was used for this practice of avodah zarah, and therefore it's going to be asar. Rav Shmuel Amiel Amar Bezman Shakar Shelo Agul Asar Bashuch Muta Amar Rav Yosef Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Alacha Karebi Karam Shimon Ben Gamliel. So the Mishnah cites this in the opinion of Rav Shmuel Gamliel, and the Gemara quotes Rav Yosef having a masorah going back to Shmuel, which is that the halacha falls like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So Amalei Abai, the student of Rav Yosef, says to his Rebbe, halacha mechlal de pligi. Now you're saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So what you're implying is that there are those who argue with Rav Shimon Gamliel, and you are paskening. So Amalei, my nafkalach minach. So Rav Yosef says to Abaye, well, even if I'm not paskening, meaning, let's say that there is no machlokas, and let's just simply say that, okay, it's just the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Meaning, Lamaisa, what's the difference? I'm saying the halacha falls on Rav Shimon Gamliel. Yes, I'm implying that there's an argument, but again, when all said and done, the halacha falls on Rav Shimon Gamliel. Amar Leh, so now Abai says to Rav Yosef. Now, the only part of this Gemara that I'm bothered by, I don't understand, is that Abai is the Talmud, and Rav Yosef's the Rebbe. And it sounds like the Abai is very, very quick to give criticism to his Rebbe. That's the part I don't fully understand, but Amar Leh, so Abai says to Rav Yosef, Gemara Gamar is a murta tehe. I don't understand. When you're learning Gemara, what is it? It's like a song? Meaning, what do? You just say the words of the Gemara without thinking, without giving a thought? Meaning, you have to say something. You have to be very careful about what you have to say. You have to think about what you have to say. You have to realize that if you're making a statement, then there's a clear implication. You can't just simply say it and not be worried about the clear implication. You don't just sing the Gemara. You have to think about the Gemara. So Abai says to Rav Yosef, by you saying that the halacha falls on Rav Shimon Gamliel, there's a clear implication, and you have to think about that. Okay, which is great, Musar. I just don't understand how Abai was, you know, it's...
I think because I remember speaking to Gemara, Rav Yosef said it first.
Okay.
To Abai. So now Abai is bouncing it back.
I like that. That certainly appeals to me. Let's continue a little bit more in the Gemara. Basar nichnas avodas kochav v'moter. So here we have a discussion in the Mishnah, which the Gemara now is analyzing, which quite frankly seems like it belongs back in the first parak of the Masechta, but okay. Meat that is brought into avodas kochavim, into an idolatrous practice. So mantan am rabbi chaber abam rabbi yochanan deloka rabbi elazar, deika rabbi elazar amar stamach sheves avodas ove kochavim l'avodas kochavim. Now, Rabbi Elazar of the opinion that, generally speaking, when you have a goy shecht an animal, he's always thinking about his avodah zarah, and every shechita that he does is going to be for the purpose of avodah zarah. But over here, Amish is telling us that if it shechted before he enters into the idolatrous temple, so it'll be fine. It's not avodah zarah. And Rabbi Elazar obviously would disagree with that because he feels that the idolaters are always thinking about their idolatry. Now, any meat that comes out is going to be considered zivchei mesim. It's going to be considered takrovus of avodah zarah. My tam, yef shod leket takrovus of avodah kochavim. So it's impossible that which it comes out with is not takrovus of avodah kochavim. Let me just spend a moment to explain this Gemara a lot better. We're not talking about the animal emerging. The animal's not going to emerge. In other words, the animal was offered for the idol. Right. In other words, what we're describing over here is the following. Meaning that if you have a person leaving this temple, or this idolatrous temple, and he comes out with, let's say, money. How did he get that money? Probably what happened was is that he sold it to an idolater, who then in turn, he sold an animal to an idolater, and the idolater used the animal for avodah zarah. So what's the money? So the money now is an exchange for avodah zarah. And as we discussed already earlier in the Masechta, so any not only the Avodah Zarah, but gains of the Avodah Zarah also has the status of Avodah Zarah. So money, the Gemara points out, Rav Yehuda ben Beseri, the time Rav Yehuda ben Beseri, Omer minayin l'takoros avodos kochavim, shematame ba'ol shenemar, v'yitzmedu l'ba'al po'or v'yochlu zivchei mesim. Ma'meitz metame ba'ol, avtakoros avodos kochavim, metame ba'ol. And the Gemara points out that the Avodah Zarah, the Avodah Zarah has the status of, Takrovus Avodah Zarah has the status of a mace. A mace is Metame Ba'ol, and a mace is also Asur Bahana. So here too, it is going to be Asur Bahana. And again, not just the Takrovus, not just the offering itself, but anything that was exchanged for it as well is going to be Asur. And therefore, when you're coming back, so you can't do business with that person because that person has the gains of Takrovus Avodah Zarah. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow, we pick it up at the two dots towards the bottom.